What time does this class end? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter 5, Lord Rishabhdev's Teachings, Text 31. Lord Rishabhdev's hands, feet, and chest were very long. His shoulders, face, and limbs were all very delicate and symmetrically proportioned. His mouth was beautifully decorated with his natural smile, and he appeared all the more lovely with his reddish eyes spread wide like the petals of a newly grown lotus flower, covered with dew in the early morning. The irises of his eyes were so pleasing that they removed all the troubles of everyone who saw him. His forehead, ears, neck, nose, and all his other features were very beautiful. His gentle smile always made his face beautiful, so much so that he even attracted the hearts of married women. It was as though they had been pierced by arrows of Cupid. About his head was an abundance of curly, matted brown hair. His hair was disheveled because his body was dirty and not taken care of. He appeared as if haunted by a ghost. Purport. Although Lord Rishabhdev's body was very much neglected, his transcendental features were so attractive that even married women were attracted to him. His beauty and dirtiness combined to make his beautiful body appear as though it were haunted by a ghost. Descriptions of the transcendental body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are the nectar for our ears. We should pay close attention in deep meditation on these descriptions of the body of the Lord. As you know, in material life, everyone is body conscious because the body is known to be the medium by which you obtain pleasure. Most people think in that way. You'll find that most people today are not subtle enough to understand the mind's role in material pleasure, as was explained nicely yesterday in class, that if the mind is agitated, disturbed, full of anxiety, the body cannot feel pleasure through the senses. In this way, actually, the mind is the most important. It's the central station for all the sensory inputs. And if the central station is having problems, then it's not possible to feel contentment, even though you may be physically comfortable. Everyone has had experience about how when you're in anxiety, when you're overwhelmed by mental anxiety, you can't be happy and content, even when you're in a very comfortable, luxurious situation for your body. People focus on the body and they pin all their hopes for happiness on their body. And of course, they're always disappointed. That disappointment in their body causes them to doubt that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has a body. Because we fail at bodily enjoyment, we think God cannot have a body. Bodily enjoyment is not possible. But when we hear these descriptions from the Shastra, our hearts become soothed. Yes, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has a form. But that form is not like our forms. This causes peace in our hearts and minds. We know that Lord Sri Krishna is successful in his form. There's never a flaw. There's never a drop of material contamination about his form. Indeed, his form is not different from himself. So many incarnations are presented in Srimad Bhagavatam. And generally you get a nice description of their form. Of course, there is Swayam Bhagavan, the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original, Lord Sri Krishna. When you hear these verses describing, for example, Lord Rishabhdev's hands, feet, and chest, his shoulders, face, and limbs, his mouth, his eyes, even the irises of his eyes, this causes your heart to rejoice. These descriptions are meant for you to think deeply about, just like when you come before the deity. You take in all the features of the deity. It is a wonderful Vaishnav practice to stare at the deity form of the Lord. Who else will enjoy you staring at them? Try it. Try to stare at someone. They feel very uncomfortable. Try just to sit in front of them and you'll not like. Even if you're a householder and your spouse does it, you'll become very uneasy. Why are you looking like this? Why do you keep staring? But Krishna, you can come before him and just stare and stare and stare and stare. That is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The only person who is like that. The more you stare at Krishna, the more you begin to realize, I cannot take in all this beauty. My senses are limited. Krishna's beauty is unlimited. How can you blame anyone for becoming attracted to Krishna? This point is made often in the 10th canto. Krishna's dearest devotees, the cowherd girls of Vrindavan, they make that presentation. How can you blame us for being attracted to you? Who is there that can resist your unlimited beauty? Let us take the case of Kubja Trivikra. As you know, she was a hunchback woman. And she did one thing right. She offered sandalwood pulp to the Lord as he and Balaram and the cowherd boys were rampaging through Mathura. Yes, Krishna, as a young teenager, was wandering through Mathura acting in the role of the perfect juvenile delinquent, not caring at all for the law of Kamsa. Of course, you don't have experience of these things in Mumbai, but in many Western cities, young teenagers, they often form bands, groups, and they just walk through the city and just break store windows and just do things unruly just for the sake of it. In New Zealand, the teenagers like to put miniature bombs in people's post boxes. Why? Because just something to do. So, everything originates in Krishna, Janmadiya Sataha. So Krishna was strolling through Mathura with Balaram and the cowherd boys and just doing whatever he liked. Taking cloth meant for the king, taking sandalwood pulp meant for the king. So then, because Kubja offered sandalwood pulp, that offering became her key to success. The story of Kubjas has to be viewed on two levels, the acharyas explain. On the one level, she only did one right thing, offering sandalwood pulp to the Lord. That was her pious activity. On another level, she's Bhushakti. She's a personality of Krishna's internal potency. Still, the acharyas instruct that you view this lila on both levels so that you may profit in your understanding. That simply by Kubja's offering sandalwood pulp to the Lord, her devotional life flourished. Now, let us analyze the nature of that flourishing of her devotional life, because it was so much dependent, that flourishing was so much dependent on the beauty of Krishna's form. You know how Krishna straightened out her hunchback in a very artistic way. Of course, Krishna can do anything. He didn't have to touch her in order to straighten her out. Simply by his will, it could happen. But in the Lord's pastimes, he always does things in a way that is human-like, but simultaneously inconceivable. Rupa Goswami explains this point in Laghu Bhagavatamrita, which is the handbook for avatar science. He explains that Krishna acts in such a way that seems to be human, but is always inconceivable. In order to attract your consciousness is attracted to human affairs. So Krishna will behave in that way, but at every step, there'll always be something inconceivable to let you know this is God. Of course, in Vrindavan, even though the opulence is there, no one cares. In terms of the opulence, in terms of the Lord's extraordinary powers. Therefore, Rupa Goswami explains in Laghu Bhagavatamrita that in Vrindavan, the opulence of the Lord is surrounded, overwhelmed by the sweetness. In this way, Nanda Maharaj might take note of Krishna doing something extraordinary. He might even say, Garga Rishi said, these two boys, they're like demigods, or maybe even my son Krishna is like Narayan. He may say that, but in no way will he ever lose his standing as Krishna's father. His consciousness will not deviate from that point. Whereas in Dwarka, you have the sweetness surrounded by opulence. So, Kubja had the Lord's feet pressed on her feet, and then under her cheekbones, the Lord's hands were there. So, as you know, Krishna pressed down on her feet and up on her cheekbones and straightened her out. Just by the touch of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, she turned into a beautiful young girl. Now, naturally, she started feeling obliged to Krishna. You can just think, if you were so ugly, hunchback old lady, and then you became transformed into a beautiful person, you'd be very thankful to whoever did that. So you cannot blame her for flirting with Krishna. This is the point. This lila of Kubja, I realize, is a little difficult to understand. Because Krishna will be acting in such a way that seems to resemble something you may have seen in cinemas. Especially now in Mumbai, that the Bollywood is becoming more and more flagrant. So you can view the lila of Kubja through those conditioned eyes and you'll miss the point. I know it's a little difficult, though, because Krishna seems to be acting in a certain kind of way when he visits the house of Kubja. But for now, what is going on? Both Krishna and Kubja, as well as Balaram and the cowherd boys, they're in the middle of the road in Mathura. And what is Kubja doing in the middle of the road, right there with Krishna, the cowherd boys, Balaram? She's pulling on Krishna's dhoti. A little embarrassing. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that Krishna's telling her, please, please, don't act like this. We're in the middle of the road, in the middle of the city. And then she replies, don't blame me, you touched me first. This way, the conversation's going on. So then you know how Krishna gives his famous speech of renunciation, demonstrating his opulence of detachment. He indeed compliments her for her femininity. He says, certainly a beautiful girl like you is exactly what a traveling young man as I need. This is what I need. How is Krishna saying that? He's saying that while looking at Balaram, the cowherd boys. So he's speaking powerful words of attachment, but he's looking somewhere else in the mood of detachment. You can try this sometimes. It's very effective. You can say some powerful words to someone while looking the other way. It causes a very fascinating effect. And the person's wondering, did you really mean what you said? So Krishna did like that. He spoke these powerful words. Certainly a beautiful young girl like you is fully equipped to put at ease the anxieties of a traveling young boy like me. And then he left. He promised, I'll come to your house in the future. But he left, showing that as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he has no need. That is what Bhagavad Gita says. Namam karmani limpanti. Name karma phale spriha. Krishna says, I don't need anything. I don't want anything. I have no goals to achieve. I don't have to set any goals. So he demonstrates this in his lila. Even though Kubja is right there in the middle of the road, pulling at his cloth. Now, when did Krishna decide to fulfill his word to Kubja? After Uddhava returned from Vrindavan. Uddhava gave the full report about the Braja Prem, the most ecstatic love felt by the most ecstatic devotees. He gave that full report to Lord Krishna. Although the Lord is all-knowing, although the Lord is Sarvadarshan, Shukadev Goswami explains, the Lord sees everything, and of course, the Lord is Bhagavan, still, the Lord enjoyed hearing the report from Uddhava. In fact, the Acharyas explain that because the Lord is addressed as Bhagavan, that is a hint to let you know that Krishna had not neglected the residence of Vrindavan. He was present in Vrindavan in his bhava expansion. That presence of the Lord brought about by the heartfelt love of the devotees there. He revealed that mystery to Uddhava. That is the meaning of Shukadeva Goswami saying, Bhagavan. Bhagavan heard the report of Uddhava. Bhagavan is all-powerful. Certainly he was not going to neglect those devotees in Vrindavan. Therefore, he had a dual manifestation that he explained to Uddhava. After hearing from Uddhava the report, Krishna decided, there are some devotees I want to please. Just as the devotee is always thinking how to please Krishna, similarly, Krishna is always thinking how to please the devotees. This is something that takes some time for us to understand. In the beginning of our devotional service, we're not so sensitive to how Krishna is caring for us. In the beginning, we're focusing on being true to our vows, controlling our senses, performing devotional service out of duty. But as the heart becomes more and more purified, we begin to realize Krishna is treating me much better than I have ever treated him. I don't deserve all this. By hearing Krishna's pastimes, your heart becomes equipped with the confidence that Krishna will always take care of me better than anything I could ever conceive of. If I just allow myself the spiritual advancement necessary to perceive this inconceivable care of the Lord. So Krishna decided to go to the house of Kubja. He brought Uddhava along. Why did he bring Uddhava along? Because Krishna, he understands how to do everything properly. He knew where Kubja was at. He knew that she was very much attracted to his form. And he knew that her occupation was now a beautiful society girl. And the Lord does say in Bhagavad Gita, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you give away, do as an offering for me. So it was obvious that Kubja had a certain offering in mind based on her occupation. Krishna understood that. Now, you have to understand, this was the simple, genuine presentation of Kubja. On the one hand, you can't condemn her. She was going to offer her natural occupational talents to the Lord. What was going on in the heart of Kubja? She was afflicted by wanting Krishna to satisfy her senses. She was burning with the desires to use Krishna for her pleasure. Still, she's focused upon Krishna, and Krishna's going to her house to please her. He brought Uddhava along because Krishna knew. Everyone understands Uddhava is a pillar of Dharma. No matter what Kubja does, because I have Uddhava with me, no one will talk. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that. So, they arrived at Kubja's house. And you cannot imagine her delight upon seeing the entrance of the Lord's transcendental form. She was surrounded by her hosts of girlfriends, because by that time, obviously, she was a very successful society girl. So she had an entourage of girlfriends. They all received Krishna very nicely. They offered Krishna a nice seat. They also offered Uddhava a seat. But Uddhava touched the seat with his hand and then sat on the floor, indicating that I do not take a seat next to Krishna. So they looked around, and what did they see in this house? Everywhere was everything to incite the desires. Pictures, fragrances, flower garlands, incense in the air, canopies decorated with pearl necklaces. The whole house was just focused on one purpose and one purpose only: to increase the kama, to increase the lust. Now remember, Kubja's great success is that she's focused on Krishna. At the same time, her mistake is that she wants to use Krishna to satisfy her senses. Therefore, she's afflicted. The Bhagavatam describes that Kubja's heart is afflicted by these desires to use Krishna to satisfy herself. So what does she do? She goes into her inner chambers to bathe, to put on fragrances, sandalwood pulp, In other words, she's preparing for what seems to be the kind of enjoyment that is so relished, especially in the age of Kali. And what does Krishna do? He seems to fall into a pattern that is also predictable in so many cinemas. He goes into the inner part of her house and just seats himself, reclining or seating himself, upon a bed in her inner chambers. Meanwhile, Kubja is bathing and clothing herself with fine opulent cloth, beautiful scents. And she then enters the room where Krishna is seated. And she's smiling and fluttering her eyes in a very attractive way. So, you would think, oh, this seems all oh so familiar. But actually, it is very dissimilar. Because Krishna has no material desires. He did not go to Kubja's house to get pleasure. He is the self-sufficient, Anandamurti, the form of all pleasure and bliss. Why did he go to Kubja's house? To turn her into a pure devotee. In other words, Kubja had a problem. She was attracted to Krishna's beauty, but she wanted to use Krishna to fulfill her desires. So Krishna was going to remove this impediment in her advancement in pure love of God. So what seems to be an ordinary romantic passionate scene is actually a scene of transformation. A scene of the removal of an imperfect approach to bhakti. So she's smiling before Krishna, shyly, and Krishna responds in such a way that we would again think is very familiar. He grabs one of her arms that's covered with bangles and he pulls her toward him. And what does Kubja do? She grabs the lotus feet of the Lord, and simply by smelling their fragrance, she becomes relieved of all her torturous desires. That is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A scene that looks so power-packed with passion is actually a scene of complete transformation. Simply by smelling the fragrance of the Lord's lotus feet, Kubja became relieved of all the material afflictions of lusty desires that troubled her. And then in her purified consciousness, she embraced the Lord, in this way becoming totally enlivened in proper Krishna consciousness. Her attraction for the form of the Lord was her greatest asset, even though there were some crooked things in her approach. Crooked from the viewpoint of pure bhakti, in that a devotee never thinks of using Krishna to satisfy his or her senses. We always think to use our life to satisfy Krishna's senses. Still, we cannot fault Krishna for we cannot fault Kubja for becoming attracted to Krishna. So don't condemn Kubja. Have sympathy for her. What can be done? Krishna is so beautiful. What can be done? Krishna appreciated her sincere, simple attachment. At the same time, he wanted to make some adjustments in her loving mood. So after she embraced Krishna and her love for Krishna became purified, she made a proposition to the Lord. These inner chambers of my house are fully equipped with food and drink. For 3 days, we can just stay here. But the Shastra calls her unfortunate Kubja. Unfortunate Kubja made this presentation to the Lord. Why is she called unfortunate? Even after having embraced the Lord, even after smelling the fragrance of the Lord's lotus feet, she's called unfortunate because Krishna is not going to stay. The Acharyas say that Kubja was wanting the Lord to agree that she would be his only girlfriend. Krishna was not going to agree to that. Krishna is self-sufficient. He doesn't rely on anyone. Everything is his energy. To demonstrate that point, he left the house of Kubja along with Uddhava. Now, Shukadeva Goswami says that in this lila, there is a warning for those who are attached or attracted to intimate relationships with the Lord. Why should one develop attraction for the Lord and at the same time want to fulfill one's own desires? This is not very intelligent. That was Kubja's fault, you might say. But Krishna himself rectified it. And then he left with Uddhava. And he went to the house of Akura. In other words, he went to please another devotee. So, once again, let us look at this lila with Kubja on two levels. She's Bhushakti, not an ordinary person. She's an expansion of the internal potency of the Lord. But looked at another way, she's her only asset was that she offered some sandalwood pulp to the Lord as a hunchbacked old lady. She had no other stock of pious activities. The Acharyas point out that you look at this lila on two levels, just as you look at Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita on two levels. On the one hand, Arjuna is an eternal associate of the Lord. There's no question of Arjuna being defective. But on the other hand, his behavior on the chariot with Krishna in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, it's maya. Even Krishna smiled at Arjuna's situation when Arjuna began hesitating when he saw who was on the other side of the battlefield. Krishna smiled. Just see how powerful my maya is. Srila Prabhupada explains this point. Krishna was thinking while he was smiling. Arjuna is my eternal associate. He's right here on the chariot with me, and still he's falling into maya. How powerful is my illusory energy? Then again, you know Arjuna is Krishna's eternal associate. So you have to learn to see with split-level vision to fully relish these pastimes. The point we should remember is how can we blame anyone for being attracted to the form of the Lord? Who was the demon who... Kalyavana? Yes. While Krishna was collecting the booty after a battle... Yes, isn't that when Kalyavana came? Is that so? Or it was when Krishna was coming out of the city. Yes? And Kalyavana was coming. And the Lord kept walking quickly and Kalyavana ran after him, could not catch him. What was Kalyavana's first thought? Indeed, this person is very beautiful. He noted that. But still, his mind had its demoniac purposes. So, even the demons notice how beautiful Krishna is. But because of their perverted mentality, they seek to eradicate Krishna. An impossible task. The attractiveness of the Lord's form, that becomes our heart and soul. And we begin to more and more appreciate how the devotees see the form of the Lord, drinking that form with their eyes. Think about that. Your eyes become cups, and they drink the beauty of the form of the Lord. In Vrindavan, the gopis are most expert at this meditation on the form of the Lord. They take the form of the Lord, that vision of the form of the Lord, through their eyes into their heart, and they embrace that form in their heart. And then the Lord, as the super soul, returns their embrace from within the heart. Each of our senses has a perfect sense object as its goal. For the eyes, the perfect sense object is the form of the Lord. For the ears, the perfect sense object are the words of the Lord, the sound of the Lord's flute. For the nose, the perfect sense object is the fragrance of the Lord. For the tongue, the perfect sense object is the sweetness of the Lord's body, as well as for the sense of touch. In material life, our senses are destroyed by contact with material sense objects. But as soon as Krishna's service becomes the object of our senses, then we begin to come alive. Dhruva Maharaj found that out. He realized when he saw Lord Prishnigarbha, actually I've been asleep, but now that the Lord's darshan is there, I feel my senses coming out of slumber. I feel alive. Every day we have the opportunity to stare at Krishna as the deity form of the Lord. Let us not feel ashamed to just stand before the Lord and look and look and look. This is devotional service. The more we look at the deity form of the Lord, the more that image of the form of the Lord fixes itself in our hearts. That's the whole purpose of seeing the Lord every day in the temple. The image of the deity form of the Lord becomes fixed in your consciousness, and more you begin to carry that form with you throughout the day. All right, we'll stop here. Are there any questions?
Most of us are based in a particular temple, say Radha Gopinath temple in Bombay or wherever we are situated, and we come very often and see the deities, the first time we see them we feel attracted, but as the time goes by, you know, we have seen the deities in all the possible features that they appear, and then it appears like a normal vision to us, and we tend to lose the charm that we experience the first time we saw them. So how do we really avoid this so that we can always see the newness and the beauty of the deities, and that beauty always increases in our heart over the period of years?
Any relationship requires work. So in the beginning phases of bhakti, we have to push ourselves to keep our relationship with Krishna fresh. In the advanced stages of bhakti, there's no question of having to push yourself because Krishna's pull is felt so strongly. As Queen Kunti prays in the first canto, Gange Vogam Avastati, may my attraction for you, Krishna, flow like the Ganges flows to the sea without stop. But in the beginning, we have the problem of material contamination, which makes us unnaturally unattracted to Krishna. But with some work, that natural attraction will revive. So part of that work in reviving our natural attraction is begging Krishna. You come before Krishna and you offer your prayers as the humble servant of your spiritual master. It is unnatural that I don't feel increased attraction for you. Please rectify this heart problem I have. Every day you come before the deity like that, and Krishna will arrange. Just like he arranged to please Kubja, certainly he'll arrange to please all of his devotees. We just have to be patient. What we are doing is a lifetime career, at least. And also bear in mind that Krishna is very expert at bringing you deeper and deeper into his service. So when you start to feel that way, oh, I'm not as attracted to Krishna as I was when I was a new devotee, then you begin to think, how can I increase my service? How can I increase the quality of my hearing and chanting? And then you'll notice an increase in the attraction for Krishna. Still, though, you're always going to think, I don't have enough attraction for Krishna. Kaviraj Goswami in Chaitanya Charitamrita says, this is the inconceivable thing about love of Krishna. The more that you have, the more advanced in bhakti that you become, the less bhakti you think you have. It doesn't make sense on the material platform. Just like if you become a doctor, or you become an engineer by studying so many years, you have this sense that I've mastered the material. I've mastered the subject matter. I'm on top of this field of study. But love of Krishna is not like that. The more you become advanced, the less you think you are attracted to Krishna. Because Krishna is unlimitedly attractive. So, the more you become advanced, the more you realize there's so much more of Krishna to be attracted to. And you just go on like that eternally. So, understand how Krishna does things. You're entering into a bottomless pit. And out of humility, a devotee thinks, I don't have any attraction for Krishna. And then the devotee does more service, becomes more conscientious, more sensitive in bhakti, and Krishna reciprocates. But still you think then, I have no attraction for Krishna. It just goes on and on and on. Srila Prabhupada gives the example of the ripe mango and the unripe mango. There's no difference. Mango is a mango. In time, the unripe mango becomes ripe. It's just a question of time. So, devotional service in the immature stage and the mature stage, never mind, it's still devotional service. In the course of time, the unripe bhakti becomes ripe. But we require lots of guidance and lots of care so that we'll not leave our Krishna consciousness because we can't perceive the transformations that are happening. We may become impatient and then throw away our good fortune. So therefore we need to buttress our life with all the support systems that we can. And then gradually we'll see the natural attraction for Krishna bubble up in our hearts. Therefore, the Bhagavatam explains in one purport that even the neophyte devotee is unconsciously liberated. You've got it in your hands, but you're not conscious of it. Krishna consciousness means become conscious of what you already have. If you give a valuable jewel to a child, the child will just throw it away. the child has to become conscious. What is a diamond? But the child has the diamond in the hand, but doesn't understand its value. Therefore, as someone was explaining in class yesterday, I believe, if you want the diamond back from the child, you offer the child a shiny door key or something. Yeah. Yes, I was listening to class while exercising. So you give the child an ordinary house key. Take this, it's so shiny. And the child gives you the diamond back. Because the child doesn't know what he's got. So many of our problems in devotional service are due to a lack of appreciation of what we have. We can't see it. So that stage is very delicate. Therefore, we require so many support systems until we become more conscious of what we have. Anything else? Yes?
Which form of the Lord should one meditate on? There is Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu and there is Rajendra Nandan Krishna.
Which form of the Lord is?
Which form of the Lord should one always hold in the heart, try to meditate on?
Shyam Sundar.
Hare Krishna.
Still, devotees have their individual tastes. Nevertheless, Lord Chaitanya says Shyam Sundar, so we say Shyam Sundar. Okay? All right.
It was a beautiful point you made about staring at the deities, but the tendency in India is that there's many times devotees tend to become sahaja-like and they start crying and talking to deities, which is not necessarily the state that they are in, but they tend to try to have something which is premature, which might look very much like devotion, but which is actually very superficial and very false. So how do we really distinguish that somebody is actually staring with love and somebody is actually staring out of some show that they want to do?
We're speaking about staring at the deities. So akamo sarvakama va moksha kamo dadati. Whether you're full of material desires, free from material desires, or lusty for liberation, tivrena bhakti yogena, you focus on Krishna with the intensity of a ray of sunlight. Kubja's motives weren't exactly correct, but she was completely focused on Krishna. And with Krishna's help, the material blockages were cleared. She simply wanted to please her senses with Krishna. But at least it was all Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Stare at the deities. Begin from the feet. That's how you view a respectable person, from the feet up. Your heart will become transformed. As for, in general, how to distinguish between someone who's taking things cheaply and someone who is actually dedicated to Krishna's service, that's why bhakti requires guidance. In guidance, with guidance and in good association, you see clearly your position. All the devotees are so much better than me. It's very obvious. That's the wonderful thing about Prabhupada's society of devotees. You're always reminded at every moment, oh, so many glorious devotees. What am I? But if you're just chanting in a secluded place prematurely, you'll think, oh, just see the power of my chanting. Just see how advanced I'm becoming. Just see my sentiments. That's why Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur condemns the activities of chanting in a solitary place before one has reached the appropriate level. Because when you're alone, it's easy to think you're the greatest. I was discussing with His Holiness Shivaram Maharaj how in that last verse of Dushtamana, you know, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's prayers about the cheating of false pride, thinking I'm a great devotee. His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj always quotes about the stool of the pig, the boar, becoming coming on your face. That is the desire for pratishtha, fame. So, in the last verse, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, you realize your swaroop within the kirtan, within the congregational chanting. Only then can you go off and do your bhajan in solitude. Very interesting point. Very interesting point, which distinguishes our line. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Glory to Srila Prabhupada.